Chapter 5, The Land of Freedom. Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Matthew 9:12. Orange sunlight flooded my face as I stepped from the shaky boards onto solid, flat earth, peeling numb hands from the ropes and breathing a last prayer of gratitude. I stumbled exhausted onto the dewy ledge of rock and grass that overlooked the river. The last sound I noticed before drifting off to sleep was the faint roar of the river far below. What seemed like only seconds later, my eyes squinted open, the blinding overhead sun indicating I'd slept for a few hours. But instead of feeling its warmth, I was shaking with chills. Every movement seemed to set off more pain in my hands and arms, as if my whole body was now affected. As I lay there, the faint impression of a dream echoed around in my brain. I saw a man seated at a table, a large wooden table made of long, rough-cut boards. Another chair had been pulled out across from him as if for a guest. Small, round bread loaves in a wooden bowl had been set out next to wooden cups. With his thick flannel shirt and leather boots, he looked like he lived in the woods on this side of the river. Large, calloused hands rested on the tabletop. Kind brown eyes with a gentle smile framed by a thick, untrimmed beard. We locked eyes, and then it ended. What did it mean? A dinner table outside in the woods? Strange. But I could still feel the warmth of his smile. He seemed completely at peace. Aching limbs jerked my thoughts to the night before, retracing my steps through the dark ravine and across the bridge. The panic and tears, the raging river and the still small voice, it all replayed like a movie. I will never leave you or forsake you. Follow me, and I will lead you to the other side. His presence had met me on the bridge and saved my life. But I had come here to start a new life, to make something of myself. And for the first time, I realized that I didn't even have a plan. I'd only ever dreamed of getting to the land of freedom, but had given no thought to what I would do after that. Rolling over into a sitting position, I felt the crunch of the seeds in my cinch sack still looped around my belt. But those would have to wait, for I had suddenly realized how thirsty I had become. My tongue felt thick and dry. It was enough motivation to get me on my feet and walking down the little dirt path that stretched out in front of me. Winding downhill and deeper into the woods, it generally followed the curve of the river. I was relieved to find occasional hints of human activity. A well-maintained path, a cornfield, an old fence in need of attention. This meant help wasn't far away. The fever and chills made walking difficult, but now I was more concerned about dehydration. I needed to find help within the next few hours. In the meantime, the shade of a large tree offered the chance for a much-needed rest. With my back against its solid trunk, I ignored my body's aches and pains just to listen. The sound of the woods had been one of my loves since boyhood. Learning to identify the different birds and insects by their unique songs and chirps and buzzes. At times, even the absence of sound was enchanting, leaving only the humid midday breeze and the symphony of leaves and branches rustling in the wind. As I sat listening, a faint sound stood out from the rest, like tree limbs falling to the ground every 10 to 20 seconds. Knowing that I was probably on someone's property, I thought it best to approach willingly than be approached suspiciously. So, gathering myself up, I made my way straight through the thick underbrush, ignoring the winding path straight toward the sound. After 100 yards or so, I noticed that the trees had become more orderly and the underbrush disappeared. There was no fence marking a change in property lines, but there was a distinct difference in the feel of the land into which I had crossed. An occasional waft of sweetness indicated ripe fruit was hanging on trees nearby, and the crunch of pecan shells and their half-eaten contents underfoot let me know even the squirrels were well fed here. Different varieties of ornamental shrubs and ferns grew wildly, but not unintentionally in certain places, and after another 200 yards or so, I realized I was in some type of garden. Not a vegetable garden, but something like a winding orchard in a master-planned park. Not great for mass harvesting with equipment, but beautiful for walking and talking and eating. By now, the sound of human activity was very close, and I caught a glimpse of a worker through the trees ahead. He was up on a ladder with what looked like large pruning shears, thinning the branches on a cluster of fruit trees. Weaving my way to an opening with a better line of sight, I realized he was a broad-shouldered, middle-aged man with a thick beard and a red and blue flannel shirt, sleeves rolled up to his elbows. He was just coming down from one tree as I approached and would have walked right past me had I not said something. "Excuse me," I said, "do you know the owner of this property?" "I do," he replied as he walked, not looking in my direction or stopping to talk. How strange and almost rude, except that his tone was kind, not rushed or bothered. "Sir," I persisted, "can you please tell me where to find the owner or his house?" "I can," he said, again without looking. "But first, can you help me with these branches? I need to get them bundled for the burn pile." The gardener began busily stacking the down branches under a tree, his back turned. The nerve of this guy, I thought to myself. Here I am in pain, and he's asking me, a total stranger, to help him with his work. Can't he see that I'm struggling? "Sir," I said, my voice a little more strained this time, "I need help." As soon as I said it, my knees buckled a little, and I sat straight down, more because I had to than because I wanted to. Turning to face me, he grinned. "Well, you should have led with that, brother." He closed the distance between us with a few long strides and took a knee in front of me. "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. Shivering, exhausted, and at a loss for words, I simply held out my hands. It had been a while since I'd actually looked at them. They were worse in the sunlight than I'd expected. Both hands were angry red and swollen. The dozen or more puncture wounds where the thorn tips had lodged were oozing with pus and dirt. Ironically, now that I was in the land of freedom, I was truly miserable. It hurt just to hold my hands up, and I winced as the man reached out. As big and calloused as his hands were, I expected him to handle me roughly, bracing for the pain, but his touch was light as a feather. "Those thorns need to come out," he assessed. "You're not going to like it, but I will work fast, and I can see that you need some refreshment." As he said it, he looked up from my hands, and we locked eyes. Kind, brown eyes, with a gentle smile framed by a thick, untrimmed beard. I had seen this face before. My dream. A thrill of hope shot through me, and somehow I knew I was meant to find him. Thank you, God, for helping me. The gardener lost no time. I sat less than 5 minutes before he returned with two flasks of fresh, cold water, a first aid kit of sorts, and a freshly cut tree stump, which he used as a makeshift operating table for my hands. With my back against one of his fruit trees, he allowed me to take a long drink of the most refreshing water I had ever tasted. It immediately brightened my spirit and seemed to lessen the effects of my fever. Gently placing my left arm onto the stump, he first washed my hand and arm and gently cleaned it with a towel. Everything radiated with a dull pain, but it was not unbearable. Next, he pulled out a very small blade which looked like a surgeon's scalpel. The blade seemed like a tiny toy in his massive hands, and he could see that it made me nervous. "Trust me," he said, "I'm not just a gardener." And with that, he dipped his razor-like tool in a small container of thick, clear oil and positioned it over the first wound. Suddenly, I had a flashback. Walking down the stairs on the back porch as a boy, a splinter from the deck railing lodged deeply into the palm of my hand. It was a small splinter, but painful, and it took my mom a couple minutes digging with a needle and tweezers to finally tease it out. It was a dramatic scene with lots of tears. I could only imagine how deeply those thorn tips were embedded by now, and with every nerve in my hand now hypersensitive because of the infection and swelling, I clenched my teeth hard as I anticipated the pain of the blade digging into the skin. Somehow, without touching any other part of my hand, the steady tip of the gardener's blade went straight to the puncture site. For a split second, I felt a sharp pain and bit down, expecting it to worsen. But as quickly as it happened, he was already plucking the thorn tip from the skin with an instrument in his other hand. I looked down, and the skin at that spot had already healed. The swelling and redness where the thorn tip had been was gone, and the pain at that spot was completely gone. It was a little miracle. "How did you do that?" I asked excitedly as he continued to work. "I've never seen anything like it." "My blade is soaked in oil, brother, so it heals as it cuts," he replied, his eyes never leaving his work. The process was repeated quickly and flawlessly over and over, first in my left hand and then in my right. With the extraction of each thorn, the redness and swelling reduced more and more. And each time, I began to trust him more, learning how to relax and not clench my teeth. The pain would be sharp for a second or two, and then it would be over, but that pain was nothing compared to what I had been dealing with for days. "I noticed your seed bag," he said as he was wrapping up. "You must know John from across the river." I was stunned. How could he know that? John had been here, but that was decades ago. "He's our neighbor and the one who gave me these seeds," I said. "How could you know him?" "I'm the one who gave him that seed bag and the seeds in it. They're quite valuable." With that, he smiled and plucked out the last thorn, leaving me speechless and wincing a little. The process took a while, and my legs fell asleep sitting there straddling the tree stump. But when it was over, I found that my hands and arms had returned to normal, and my fever was gone. I was still ravenously hungry and thirsty, but I felt like myself again for the first time in days. It occurred to me in that moment that chronic pain causes time to pass so slowly, and it makes everything seem distant. Without even realizing it, I had been focusing only on myself and my symptoms up to that point. It was hard to pay attention to anything or anyone else in the presence of constant pain.